Welcome to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's Fantasy Hockey Show. Hi, folks. I'm Paul Bruno, coming to you from just north of Toronto in Richmond Hill, Ontario, in Canada. And you can follow me at Statsman22. It's been a busy feed the last couple of weeks with the trade talk and news and rumors and the trade deadline and come and gone. And now the look at the standings down the stretch. So I'm getting a lot of opinions out there in the last little while. I hope you find them entertaining. My co-host, as always, is AJ Schultz, a great follow at AJ Schultz 24, based in another hockey mad area in the States, specifically Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. And I got to believe things are hopping there with the baseball season underway, NBA and NHL playoffs around the corner. AJ, welcome back to the show. I want to dive in with you and take a look now that we're in the fantasy hockey playoffs. I came up with an interesting spin. I told you before we went to air that I looked at my team that is now in the semifinals of a high visibility fantasy hockey league weekly pool format. And I saw that I'm playing the top team in the league. And I tried something this week. I looked at my players who were playing two or three games, and I punted them in favor of players that are playing four. And it's got me in really good shape early on. And so I wonder what you think of that strategy. And if you want to take a look at some of the teams that are facing those thin schedules, we'll start with them and then finish up with the ones that are playing four games in the week.
Yeah, I think it's a solid strategy just to get yourself some added minutes there. I don't know that I would necessarily consider doing that with my goalies. I think, you can't go chasing those necessarily. But overall, when you talk about Vegas only having two games this week, Detroit has Tampa, the Rangers, although the Rangers just lost last night, Buffalo, Boston has Nashville, Carolina, and Florida. So tough matchups for some of those three-game teams with a tough strength of schedule. But absolutely, if you're sitting on Golden Knights players with only two games this week and trying to make it into a final, you've got some tough decisions to make. Obviously, there's non-starter players on Vegas, right? Like if you've got if you've got Eichel, you're not dropping Eichel this week.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But if you're looking, you've got some mid-six guys. You've got an Anthony Mantha, an Ivan Barbashev, maybe even considering Marchessault. Like it might be worth considering just to try and get those added minutes, especially if you're switching out one of those guys for somebody on a team who's playing four games this week. So
yeah,
I like the strategy, Paul.
And AJ, it's working out so far for me. I got off to a really good start last night. You're right, not to punt on the goalies, but I got four starting goalies. That's another advantage that I have going into this round. And all three other teams that remain have three. So I have a big edge in net if I can get that far to the finals. And particularly one of the teams is very weak in goal. They got a lot of good offense. But I think I like the fact that I've got about eight or nine more games projected to play this week. And so I hope that I can edge out the top team in our loop that has been kind of running away with the league for the most part. Although I did go 1-1 against them in the regular season. So I like my chances. And I'm focusing on the teams that play four games in the week, AJ. Colorado, and some of them are big boys. Colorado, Edmonton, Nashville, although they snapped a long winning streak and they've lost their last two. I like the fact that they're playing four games this week. Tampa lost one of their four games last night, but they still got Toronto, Montreal, and Pittsburgh. I think two of those are winnable games for sure. And Washington plays Buffalo, Pitt, Carolina, and Ottawa. And I think two or three of those games are winnable for the Caps. So that's where I focused. For instance, on the Caps, I went and picked up Dylan Strome, who's playing top 6 minutes there. And I think he could fatten up his offensive stats. He's been on quite a tear most recently. And I don't need to tell you what Nashville's been up to. And certainly Edmonton's been on a roll for a long time. So those are teams that I focused on in terms of the teams that are playing four games this week. And I think it's a strategy that I thought about a couple of weeks ago in anticipation of making the playoffs, and it's working out very well so far. Why don't you lead us off in a look at the playoff races, AJ, beginning with the Atlantic, which got a little bit tighter in the last few days.
Yeah, so looking at the Atlantic, you've got Boston with a two-point lead, same number of games played as Florida, so both those clubs have seven games remaining. Your Leafs sit in third, 4 points back of the Panthers, but with a game in hand. So if you assume that they can win that extra game, you're looking at just 2 points back. From there, there's a pretty big drop off from 95 points for the Leafs to 89 points for the Lightning. Same number of games played. They both have eight. So not an impossible gap there, but 6 points would be a big hill to climb for the Lightning. I think they're pretty much established as the top wild card team. You've got a 7-point gap between them and Washington and Detroit for the wild card spot. So I think the Lightning are probably pretty cemented in there. Whether the Leafs can climb that hill with that game in hand, it certainly looks like it's not an impossible task to catch up to at least Florida, if not even possibly Boston.
Well, I think of the teams in this division, Boston has the toughest schedule remaining, AJ. So this could really bounce around and change from the way it looks today. If Boston goes flat, Florida has a really soft schedule, but they're playing very well. They're only 3-6-1 in their last 10. So the door is open a little bit for the Maple Leafs to challenge for one of those two home ice spots in the first round. And they're on a 3-game winning streak, and they aren't even healthy yet. They're expecting to get a couple of players back in the lineup. Certainly Morgan Rielly's been missed, and Kali Yarncroc up front. So they're doing it with a bit of a patchwork lineup, and everybody's really pulling on the rope right now, and they're looking good right at the moment. But I don't discount Tampa either, and they're in town in Toronto for a big game tomorrow night, and that will tell the tale between third and fourth. If Tampa loses that, I think you can guarantee that the Leafs will finish no worse than third. But the Lightning have been on a roll, the best record in the top four, 8-1-1 in their last 10 games played. So the veteran squad is rounding into form, and they figure to be a tough out for anybody in that first round as well. What about in the Metro Division, AJ? The Rangers and the Canes have pulled away from the rest of the loop by 20 points, and so they're duking it out. The Rangers right now have the best record in the conference. We were almost handing the conference title to one of the teams in the Atlantic, but it looks right now the Rangers will get the number one overall seed, and that means they get the second wild card in the first round of the playoffs. That's a big advantage because it could be Tampa or Washington. I'm sure we'd be unanimous in saying we'd rather face Washington than Tampa, so that's a consideration. And Carolina's not knocking on the door, only 3 points back, and then it's Philadelphia holding off the Caps for the race for third place there. So a couple of races, compelling thoughts in terms of the first overall in the conference caught my attention. I wonder what you think that, how do you think that's going to wind up?
It's definitely going to be a battle here straight to the end. The Rangers losing last night in a matchup with Penguins. So that, you know, if you figure if they get the win there, you go from 3 points ahead to 5 points ahead. And both New York and Carolina have 7 games remaining. So definitely a bigger hill to climb. So that would have been a nice win for them. Carolina on a 2-game winning streak. So they're certainly not going to just go away easy. But yeah, to your point, you know, the battle here is between most likely Philadelphia and Washington for who finishes in third in the Metro, who's a wild card spot. But that wild card spot, not guaranteed to Washington. As I said, Detroit is right there as well. The Islanders are only 3 points back. And Washington does have 3 games in hand on the Philadelphia Flyers. As far as how it shakes out for this right now, I don't know that there's a clear advantage to being either the Rangers at first or the Hurricanes at second. I mean, right now we're saying the Rangers would get Washington, but Carolina would get Philadelphia. So it's not, it's not a huge disadvantage if you drop to second here, depending on how many points Boston works out there. So an interesting one to watch. I think I'd almost rather, if Boston were to stay with me here, if Boston were to get past whoever's going to finish first and get the number two wildcard team, I'd rather be in second place playing third in the division than winning the Metro and getting potentially the Lightning. So
absolutely.
There's
absolutely
definitely some shuffling around there. And so you kind of, if you're the Rangers, you got to stay ahead of Boston and try and keep it that way. So there's some tight races here. The Islanders could also be a factor. They've got 2 games in hand on the Flyers as well here. So once Washington kind of evens it up in those games played, we'll see. But I would say they're definitely probably in the driver's seat between them and Philadelphia with those 3 extra games.
And AJ, what about if the Pens run the table? Then you got a chance to cheer for your club in the postseason. We can't count them out just yet. I don't discount any team that's led by Sidney Crosby, so I'll say that before you
do. Don't do it to me, Paul. Don't give me that game last night. They go in, they beat the Rangers 5-2. I'm already like, well, maybe I'm looking 5 points back. You know, it's don't do it to me,
Paul. Yeah, it's a tough hill to climb, but that's a veteran squad that I won't put the sheet over just yet. And we'll wait and see how it plays out. But we'll give you an update a week from now, too, when we're down to really short strokes. Over in the Western Conference, the Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche have seemed to pull away from Winnipeg a little bit. So it's a two-horse race at the top of that division right now. The Stars 8-2. Jake Oettinger playing lights out right now. I think he's allowed 2 goals or less in each of his last 5 starts. Really on a tear at a great time of the season. And showing that he's as good as almost any goalie in the league, including Connor Hellebuyck, when he's on the top of his game. Although Hellebuyck is going to win the goalie, the Vezina Award, running away. But Oettinger really showing well right now and leading Dallas to the top of that division. Colorado, of course, you can't discount this team. A lot of firepower at front and on defense. Goaltending is a bit of a question mark, but they're right there. And the Jets, falling off the pace a little bit, will likely play the second place team in this division in the first round. And so they're probably pretty happy to watch the two teams duke it out, and maybe they can coast a little bit. Behind them, Nashville cooled off after going 16 games without a loss. They've lost their last two, as I said, but they have a comfortable 6-point lead over St. Louis with a game in hand on the Blues. So it looks like they're going to hold on to one of the wild card spots there. And the Blues, despite an impressive win over Edmonton last night, their hopes are very, very faint in this division, AJ.
Well, I just want to, you know, your breakdown of the division, I don't have much to add there, but I do want to talk about Connor Hellebuyck and the Vezina Trophy. I agree with you. The odds agree with you. You look at, you know, I'm looking at DraftKings, the DK Sportsbook right now, Hellebuyck minus 650 to take home the Vezina. But he's on a 5-game losing streak. It's not like he's been playing good lately. And voters are going to remember what they've seen lately. 0-4-1, 3-1 or 3-8-1 is the goals against average. So it's not like he's playing, you know, really well and not getting any offensive support. He's getting beat. So they are going to need him to figure something out. They used Brossoit last night against LA. They got a win. Makes you almost wonder, would they consider using Brossoit in their next game too? Just to give Hellebuyck a little extra time off. It'd be a bold call to go with Brossoit back-to-back games, but they can't afford to drop a ton of games here. They got to stay in the mix. And if Brossoit's the one getting you the wins, it's worth considering. So,
well, they have time to think about it, AJ. So that's what they got in their favor. I don't think they're going up in the standings, but they got to protect their third spot for sure.
Well, I'll take us into the Pacific here. You've got the Canucks at the top, 100 points for them. You know, I think at one point we were thinking Vancouver might be potential favorites to take home the President's Trophy. They haven't been bad of late, but 6-3-1, you know, that's seen Dallas go 8-2-0 in their last 10. You know, you've got, Boston, we mentioned, stumbled a little bit, 6-4-0. But the Rangers are 7-3-0, so certainly not a lock as it may have once looked for Vancouver to take the top spot here. But 100 points, they are 5 points ahead of Edmonton, but the Oilers have a game in hand. They're 10 points clear of the Vegas Golden Knights, so I don't see the Golden Knights here, even though, let's see, they have 8 games left, so it's not impossible, but I just don't see the Knights crawling up to first. So they're looking at second or third here, most likely, I think, third. And then you've got 3 points between the Knights and the Kings, who are holding on to the second wildcard spot right now. Other than that, there's no contenders coming out of the Pacific at this point. Everybody else is out of it. So it's whether, you know, can the Kings catch the Knights for the third spot in the Pacific, or can they move up to the second wildcard spot ahead of Nashville and potentially save off the Blues as well? That's something that the Kings have to do here as well.
And AJ, I look at the wild card situation. It looks like I think the standings are going to stay the way they are in the Western Conference. That means Los Angeles is going to do the crossover and they're going to play against the winner of the Central Division, likely to be Dallas Stars right now. So that's going to have an interesting look in the first round for those two teams crossing over is something that we don't see too often. So that means Nashville, on the other hand, will go into the Pacific showdown and they might get Vancouver as their first round opponent. So a little bit more intrigue when you see a little bit of the crossover effect, but that's why I like the way the NHL standings are set up the way they are. And AJ, before we move on, there's little whispers in some corners that 16 playoff bound teams is not enough for some people. I know the NBA does a play-in tournament with the next two teams. I don't really want to see that because I think you got to reward, I won't say excellence, but near excellence in the regular season. It's got to count for something, these 82 games. And I think when you have 20 of 32 teams in the mix, I know it's more gates, it's more eyeballs on TV, but it's just too many teams in the postseason for my taste. I wonder what your opinion is of the potential for a play-in tournament, even if it's a one-game thing.
I absolutely not. Absolutely not. And even though my team, Penguins at, 11th in the Eastern Conference, maybe they would be in some sort of play-in thing and have a shot. It's no. If we're going to do that, let's just have multiple tournaments throughout the year or something like that and just get rid of regular season hockey altogether. I'm with you, Paul. It has to mean something. Or you know what? Let's just let everybody in and just free for all at the end of the year. Maybe Columbus can go on a run and beat somebody and win something. It's so dumb.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Half the league makes it in as it is. I think that's more than enough. Call it a day after that.
I agree with you. Maybe baseball could add more teams than they currently have. They have about a third of the teams making the postseason, but I like the 50% cutoff making the postseason in the NHL more or less. And so I hope that they keep it the status quo. AJ, let's go in now and take a look at what we did this week is designed a look at the players in the last 2 weeks, what they've been up to instead of usually 1 week in the rearview mirror, just to get a sense for what you can expect for players to produce if you make the move to add them in your playoff rounds in your fantasy hockey league. So with that said, why don't you tell us what some of the top forwards have done in the last 2 weeks and how they might help from your perspective?
Well, one name that pops off the chart here for me right away is Jonathan Drouin for Colorado, especially in light of what we were just talking about, Paul. Looking at players that are going to have a lot of games this week. Colorado is one of those teams with four games this week. Drouin has been very good over the last six games, 3 goals, 6 assists, 16 shots on goal. So you add that in, we have him at just 31% owned across leagues. So most of the people listening out here should be able to at least consider grabbing Jonathan Drouin with the multiple games this week. I don't know how your waiver system works, if you can get him in time at this point, but definitely a consideration there to add somebody like that. Another player I'll mention had a really good week, Nick Bjugstad for Arizona. One of the streakiest players I've watched in a long time. But again, he's on a run right now, 4 goals and 3 assists in the last week. In fact, he's got points right now in 6 straight games. Not a lot of power play. Shot totals is 16 over those 6 games. So, okay, decent mark there. But again, just because Arizona is not playing for anything in terms of postseason, I think there's still some value in a couple of these guys out there that are having strong weeks right now. So, Nick Bjugstad atop of that list. And then, one other team that is in a playoff fight, we've talked about the Philadelphia Flyers, Scott Laughton. All season long, we've talked about these dual eligible guys. The problem I have with Laughton is his assignment right now. They have been shuffling lines up like nobody's business. Guys like Cam Atkinson, Sean Couturier have been getting benched. So to be fair, you don't know what you're getting. In fact, most recently, Laughton was in a fourth line role. But that hasn't stopped him from getting power play opportunities. He's got 2 power play points out of his last 5 points scored, 2 of them coming with man advantage. So, yeah, I just think, you know, with his dual eligibility, he's another player that's worth taking a look at.
AJ, near the top of this at the top of the list, there's Alexis Lafreniere. It was a couple of years ago that he was drafted first overall in the NHL draft, and he's really not hit the ground running in terms of that star power that you were expecting. But he seems to have it all in good order this year, having his best season as a pro. In his last 6 games, he produced 79 fantasy points in our scoring system, and that led the all forwards with 6 goals, 4 assists, 20 shots on goal in that stretch of the last 2 weeks. So playing top 6 minutes across the ice from Alex Artemi Panarin is certainly going to help his cause down the stretch. And in that primo opportunity, a real solid add going forward. Similarly, Jake Neighbors in St. Louis, playing top line minutes, produced 4 goals and 2 assists his last 6 games played. And he's doing it across the board too, not only with shots on goal, but a little physicality with his game. If hits count in your pool, he's tallied 18. That's an average of 3 per game there. And closer to home for me, I'm delighted with the turnaround in the fortunes of Tyler Bertuzzi, taking advantage of some extra playing time. He's really played well in the second half of the season. I was wondering if he was ever going to score in the first half. It was a long time before he got his first NHL goal with the Leafs earlier this season. But now he's 1 away from 20 to show you how productive he's been in the last 2 weeks. He's got 5 goals and 1 helper, 15 shots on goal and 11 hits. We know he plays that grinding physical game and playoff style hockey. I can't wait to see what this guy does when the serious shooting does start. And similarly, another Maple Leaf physical player, dual position eligibility to your point, Bobby McMahon playing a third line role in a pretty exciting young line with the Maple Leafs at times, and is also getting a look on the second line as well. So he's tallied 4 goals and 1 helper, 21 shots on goal in his last 7 games. So that's a pretty good look for him. And he adds that physicality too with 8 hits as well. Other forwards that caught your eye in this list, AJ?
Yeah, I'll just mention one other guy and a plug for the RotoWire depth charts on the website. So Jean-Gabriel Pageau played last night in a first-line role for the Islanders, along with Anders Lee and Bo Horvat. These are probably the best support players he's had all season long. They've been having him in a third-line role, sometimes even a fourth-line role. Now, whether he stays there or not remains to be seen. And really, admittedly, ineffective against the Flyers in that game last night. No points, no shots. Did dish out 4 hits. Saw some power play minutes as well. But just something to keep an eye on. If he's going to be in that first line role with some better talent alongside him, I think he's a name worth watching. You look at his last 6 games, 2 goals, 1 assist, 12 shots, definitely a higher hit and block guy than some of the other forwards on this list. So again, as you mentioned, Paul, one of those guys that you can look at that stat. But yeah, just check out rotowire.com, go to our NHL depth charts. We're updating them as it happens, as quickly as we can, and keep a track on guys like Pageau, who's playing in an improved role right now.
And you can say the same thing for Adam Henrique. At the trade deadline, he was highly sought after. He wound up with Edmonton, AJ, and he's another one of those dual eligible position guys playing center and wing. He's currently on the second line on the wing alongside Leon Draisaitl, so that's a pretty good landing spot for him. And he's answered the bell with 4 goals in the last 2 weeks on 8 shots. I also like the way Anthony Cirelli's playing for Tampa right now. This is a guy who's not a 40-goal shooter, but certainly when the shooting gets a little more serious at the end of the schedule, he shows up, and he's doing it again with 4 goals in his last 6 games played. So 2 more names that I wanted to point out among the forward list. And you could do worse than getting any of the ones that we've mentioned, but I'll add one more to close it out, and that's Morgan Frost. I want to show a little love for him because he's a high first-round pick of the Flyers, and he's starting to really hit the board regularly. 5 points in his last 7 games played, only owned in 5% of leagues out there, but he's going to get a lot of run with the Flyers as they desperately try to hold on to a playoff spot, and he's a linchpin to that offense. So with that said, AJ, I want you to lead us into the talk of the top defensemen in the past 2 weeks, and who do you think is the most shining of the lights down there?
Well, before I talk about some of the guys who have been putting up good numbers, I do want to go back to, and maybe this is more of a DFS play than a season long, but we try and cater to both. And I want to talk about Connor Timmins right now, getting significant minutes with the number one power play there in Toronto. When, you know, you've got Timothy Liljegren out, Joel Edmondson out, Morgan Rielly has been out as well, although Rielly could come back sooner rather than later. But if Rielly misses any more time, it's been Timmins who's been on that top power play unit. And that's, you know, that's just asking to pick up points when you're out there with, you know, Tavares, Matthews, Nylander, and Domi right now making up that top unit. So keep an eye on that, where his assignments are, because he could pick up some significant minutes. And the reason I mention that is because Timothy Liljegren was on our list of guys who had a really good two-week stretch there. But unfortunately, he's out, most likely going to be out until closer to the last like week of the season or so. But getting back to guys who did have pretty good week, I'll go back to Vegas. We're talking about the extra games or the lack of games. Braden McNabb does have a decent week, two assists, one power play point, but a lot of shots, 15 shots over seven games, a lot of hits, a lot of blocks. So if you need those categories, Braden McNabb, a player maybe you target for next week, just because if you're still in it, just because he is only going to play those two games this week. So kind of a give and take there, Paul, with Braden McNabb. I'll kick it over to you for any other defensemen you want to talk about.
Sure, there's a bunch, AJ, but are you lobbying to come with me to a Leaf playoff game by mentioning a Leaf right off the top here? That's that's very unlike you, but I'll take it. I'll mention another one that caught my eye closer to home, and that's Jake McCabe. He's playing a lot of minutes and mostly in the defensive role, and you can see that by the 29 hits that he registered over the last seven games. That's over four a game. This team has a different look about them, AJ, and this guy might be the signature player. They're playing a more robust physical style, and a team like Florida found that out last night because they owned the Leafs in the playoffs last year by running over them. But the Leafs were every bit the physical match for the Panthers in a game that was pretty one-sided, considering the fact the Leafs jumped out to a 5-1 lead. And although they closed the gap, the Panthers did not finish the deal. The Leafs wound up winning that one and sending a rather loud message, I thought, in the process. In terms of other defensemen, look, Shea Theodore is back at the top of this list, 53 points in the fantasy realm, owned in 84% league. So there's still a few leagues where he's available. I don't understand that one, but he was the top rated player with the 53.4 points on the fantasy world last week. Alex Pietrangelo back in the fold, so that might eat into some of his offensive zone starts, but still a viable option if you can squeeze him in at the top of this list. And similarly, Braden McNabb, I did mention that this is a two-game week for the Knights, but they did have the most productive guys in the last 2 weeks, but most available players. We'll move down the list a little bit and find a guy like Nick Jensen and with the Washington Capitals. He's not very highly owned, but he picked up 5 points last week, and the Caps are getting a lot of production from unusual sources in the last little while in their effort to land a playoff spot. And Nick Jensen, a veteran defenseman who was sought after at the trade deadline, is producing right now for that club. One more name before I kick it back to you. I'll say, what about Jacob Slavin? He's a very safe pick for Pooley's looking for help on the blue line with the Carolina Hurricanes, one of the top teams in the league. He's more noted for the defensive side of the puck, but he produced 3 points in the last seven games played, and he won't hurt you with shots on goal and blocks. He's up there in both categories with 13 and 10 respectively. So a nice safe play there. And I guess you could say the same thing about Cody Ceci for Edmonton. That's been a team that's been a runaway train right now in the last few weeks and maybe even longer than that. And Ceci's caught up in the wake of that. There's an expression, a rising tide lifts all boats. And Ceci's one of those boats, produced 3 points in his last six games played, as well as 7 shots, 12 hits, and 10 block shots over the past couple of weeks. Back to you, bud.
Well, I'll take us into goalies so that I can take first crack at Pittsburgh Penguins netminder Alex Nedeljkovic, who tops our list of potentially available goalies. Played 5 games the last 2 weeks, only 14% owned. You know, that Nedeljkovic has actually been getting more looks lately because in part Jari's been struggling. Jari was actually supposed to play last night against the Rangers, but was sick. So it's possible we see Nedeljkovic go back-to-back as well. He played last night, could potentially play tonight if Jari's still under the weather. But yeah, you know, for a team that is trying to do everything it can to be a factor, Nedeljkovic is 3-0-2 in his last five starts, 2.44 goals against average. So if you need some last minute goalie help, at least right now, it looks like Nedeljkovic could see more work than Tristan Jarry. Another guy that's been seeing some extra work is Justus Annunen. Is that how you say that?
Yes, sir. Very good. You passed.
I do my best. he has played in three of Colorado's last four. Now, some of that was, you know, the fact that he beat the Nashville Predators, came in relief, gave up no goals on 22 shots. So a really good outing there. So they went back to him against Columbus. Still did okay. Three goals allowed on 24 shots in a losing effort. So I imagine we'll see Georgiev get back in between the crease here. But they're at least feeling comfortable giving Annunen a few more opportunities here down the stretch. Probably to keep Georgiev fresh for the postseason, but maybe somebody else to look at to target there. And then one more name. Kind of similar situation is big save David Rittich. I know I'm going to steal
your thunder, Paul.
You know, they're the Kings are probably going to just go with whoever's got the hot hand. The problem with Rittich right now is the consistency. You look at his last four games spread out over the month of March. He didn't get a lot of work, but he shuts out the Islanders, gives up four to Dallas, shuts out Minnesota, gives up four to Calgary. So his next start, based on that trend, should be a shutout. So we'll see when that happens. No, just kidding there. But obviously, you know, Rittich and Cam Talbot could get closer to a split share down the stretch here. We'll have to see how that all fares out. And then one name I want to mention that's not on this list, Ivan Fedotov, who got his NHL debut last night, is just a giant of a netminder. I believe he's 6'7". For Philadelphia, they got him over from Russia. Some kind of back and forth on that whole situation, but gave up two goals on 21 shots and an overtime loss to the Islanders last night. Obviously, they wouldn't have made such a strong effort to get him in if they thought Samuel Harrison was the for sure answer. So I think these guys might split the nets, or at least be kind of balanced between who gets most of the workload. Harrison, for his part, six goals allowed in an overtime loss to the Rangers, five goals allowed in a loss to Chicago, got hooked against, you know, the Islanders. And so they're looking for some alternatives in Philadelphia. And so I would look at Fedotov here and see if you can grab him if he's available.
AJ, I dropped Harrison couple of weeks ago, but I think he's still the busiest guy on this list with six appearances. And I wonder if that move to get Fedotov was just a chance to spell him and get him a rest. I think he's still going to be the guy that gets the lion's share of the games the rest of the way.
Do you want to tell a 6'7" Russian he's not starting? I certainly don't want to.
That film would be worth seeing, I'm sure, if I was involved, but maybe not. Maybe I'll do it with a phone call. But AJ, over in Buffalo, they're looking at the two goalies of future there, Devin Levi and Ukko-Pekka Laukkanen. Levi, he got three starts in the last couple of weeks, and he's owned in 29% of leagues. Now that they're down to two goalies and playing out the string, they'll probably go back and forth. But Levi has been recording some good numbers down the stretch for the Sabres, maybe better than Laukkanen, at least. And then in Montreal, similarly, a two-goalie system. So Caden Primo is getting a regular look. In the two appearances that he made, he accumulated 43 fantasy points. Again, Samuel Montembeau played a ton earlier in the season, and so you might look for a split down the stretch, and he could be good value. We've been touting Lucas Dostal for weeks. He's been outplaying John Gibson for a long while now. He's only owned in 19% of leagues, and getting the reps in is what this is all about for him down the stretch. He's another guy that might get more than 50% of the starts if you're looking for appearances, but Anaheim's not a team that I hang my hat on for too many wins, so be careful there. I'd rather take a look at the Islanders situation since they're playoff relevant still, and they have Semyon Varlamov, part of a two-goalie system, and they're trying to get Sorokin a bit of a rest too because he's played a lot of hockey. So Varlamov has some value for a team that's playing well. And finally, Kevin Lankinen is one more player that should be mentioned. I know Saros has played most of the games for Nashville. If they get to a position where they've locked down a playoff spot, you'll see him. They'll back off on him, and Lankinen will get some reps. He played three games in the last 2 weeks, so he is showing well despite only 2% ownership there. AJ, that said, now we're going to take a bit of a break, and we'll be back with injury news and our DFS picks for this 8-game schedule on Tuesday and some final thoughts. You're listening to...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back right after these messages. All right, we're back. You're listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ, and we turn our attention to injury news that cropped up in the last week or two. AJ, and why don't you slide us into that talk?
Yeah, I'll start off with saying Vince Dunn for Seattle was a game time call last night. He's back in the lineup. So that's good news for the Seattle blue line there. In terms of other guys dealing with some injuries right now, you've got William Carrier is out tonight. He's going to miss his fourth straight game. So some lingering injury concerns. Same with Aiden Hill, who our latest note, no clear timeline for him to get back into the lineup. Logan Thompson should see significantly more opportunities with him out of the lineup. Nino Niederreiter was injured on Monday. So obviously something to watch out for there. How long is he going to be out? They're calling him questionable for Thursday's matchup. Philip Deneau also missed out with an upper body injury on Monday. That's his second consecutive game. So a handful of guys dealing with some kind of recent injuries. Jordan Greenway was undergoing evaluation yesterday. Apparently that imaging, the MRI, came back with positive news, but he won't play tonight. At least they're not looking at a long-term absence. On the good news side, some names to throw out. Tomas Hertl skated in a non-contact jersey for the Golden Knights yesterday. So he is clearly trending in the right direction. Christian Dvorak, who a lot of people, I think, thought his season was probably over. They've upgraded him to day-to-day. It's possible that he'll play some games before the end of the season as well. We mentioned Morgan Riley seems to be getting close to getting back to action here. So those are a couple of notes on the injury front right away. Paul, anybody you wanted to talk about?
Well, I'll pick up on the Riley comment. The Leafs have been without 2/5 of their power play, number one power play unit, and it's really shown as that's the one group that really hasn't carried the water for this club in the last couple of weeks. They really struggled without those two guys out of the lineup. They're both back at practice, and they both could be back as early as Wednesday night against Tampa. So I'm looking forward to seeing that come to pass and get that part of the team in order as soon as possible. Two key pieces there. And over in Colorado, Valerie Nichushkin has had a tough year. was in the one of the league's protocol groups for to help him out earlier in the season with some off ice issues. He's likely to, he's been dealing with a lower body injury, likely to miss three games that are coming up this week for the Avalanche. They want to get him rocking in the lineup because he's such a key part of their top six when he's healthy. So keep an eye on that situation. Other top players that that will be missing: Elias Lindholm for Vancouver missed the last three games. And he won't play on Tuesday. It's an undisclosed hurt, but he's a significant part that they added and really would like to see him get reps in before the postseason begins. Some tough news for Oscar Sundquist in St. Louis. Torn ACL for that Blues forward means his season is over, and he'll be looking to rehab in time for the start of next year. So that's a tough one for him. That
could be a tight timetable.
Yeah.
Doubt you see him in preseason. If he plays opening night, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I think you're looking into like December, January minimum for him. And then a couple other forwards, top six types. Jesper Fast for Carolina, dealing with upper body injury. He's missed the last six games, now listed as day-to-day, so that's reason for some optimism. And finally, Andrew Mangiapane for Calgary, a team that's on the fringe of contention. They need all their big shooters in the lineup. He's been dealing with an undisclosed injury, though he's listed day-to-day. They got to get him in the fold as soon as possible to fan their flagging playoff hopes. Anybody else, AJ?
No, I think that about covers it there, Paul. Kind of the significant injuries that we've most talked about here. So I will take us in to the DFS segment here, starting us off with DraftKings. My strategy here was to go heavy on the Florida Panthers, courtesy of their matchup with Montreal tonight. It should hopefully be a points night. And I just took the first line, Paul. The whole kit and caboodle, the whole thing. Alexander Barkov, 6,800 as my center. He's got 6 points in his last four games. Hard to argue against that. I got Sam Reinhart for 7,500. Again, he's riding a six-game point streak with 4 goals and 4 assists. And I figured to get the low-cost option on this group, Carter Verhaeghe as well, 6,500. Little less productive than his cohorts here. A mere 5 points in his last six games. So, like I said, matchup with Montreal, no reason not to stack the Florida Panthers tonight as much as you can.
AJ, before you go on, I was watching the game with Verhaeghe. He was left the game for part of the final period. I don't know what his status is, but seemed to suffer at least a minor hand injury. So you might want to check his status if there's any update on him. Just a word of caution.
Yeah, no, have not seen any update yet this morning, but obviously we'll monitor that. Check back at rotowire.com for more information if you're looking at that. Looking at my center spot, I like Minnesota at home against Ottawa tonight. So Marco Rossi, 4,500, definitely boom or bust, has been all season. About what you would expect from, you know, really a rookie. I know he had 19 games last season, but for the most part out of a rookie, not surprised by some boom or bust. I think playing at home against Ottawa, a good chance to maybe be on the upside there. I obviously spent up on those wingers with Reinhart and Verhaeghe, so I had to go cheap. And I went with Alexander Holtz for New Jersey. They're playing at home against the Penguins. Holtz is on a line with Halla and Jack Hughes, so a pretty good spot to be in. Again, hit or miss, but if you look at his trend, if you're somebody who believes in trends, he's got, since mid-March, it's been goal, no points for two games, goal, no points for two games, goal, no points for two games. So tonight should be a goal night. So easy enough, you know, right? It's that predictable. Okay, maybe not. But good assignment for Holtz playing with Hughes and Halla. I think it's a good spot for him to be in.
How much does he cost?
Sorry, just 2,700. So a very cheap option for a guy getting top 6 minutes playing at home against a Pittsburgh team that's given up a lot of points this year. I'm going to stick with New Jersey for my first defenseman here and go with Luke Hughes, 3,600. You know, he's on that top power play unit. He's actually got points in 3 straight. If you go further, he's got 8 points in his last 6 games, 22 shots over that stretch. And at 3,600, I think that's a steal. Shea Theodore is my other option, 5,800 Vegas at home, tough matchup for the Golden Knights tonight when they play Vancouver. So I'm not leaning too heavy into that, but Shea Theodore has been very good of late, a little quieter their last two games, but overall had a pretty good month of March. I think he'll bounce back. My utility spot, I went, had to get at least one Penguin in here. I went with Chris Letang, 5,200, you know, had a bit of a tough time in parts of March, but he's got points in three straight games. I'm not super concerned about the lack of goals over his last 12 games. He's got seven assists over that stretch, 20 shots. So 5,200 is his price tag. And then I saved some money in net. I went all the way down to Charlie Lindgren. Unconfirmed if he'll be in net tonight, but he's playing against Buffalo. And just 7,400 is the price tag. And Washington, like we said, is in the hunt for a playoff spot. They can't really afford to give up any wins. And I think Lindgren has been fairly solid of late. A few blips on the radar, but more often than not. Not as confident if Darcy Kemper gets that start. If Kemper gets the start for Washington, I might have to look at some other options. And I'll tweet that out if that happens, how that changes. Same if Verhaeghe doesn't play, I'll tweet out an alternate lineup. I know Paul mentioned it, but at AJ Scholes 24 is where you can find that if we need to make any changes to this lineup.
AJ, you might want to use the goalie that I'm playing. I don't think I'll be able to sell you on him. I'll get to that in a sec. But I looked at the lopsided nature of some of the matchups and found some guys that were hot shooters facing these teams that are not looking so good of late to build my lineup out. And I started with Dylan Strome. I mentioned him earlier in the show as a good add this week. He's got 10 points in his last seven games played. He cost $6,800 in a matchup at Buffalo where the Sabres are basically playing out the string while Washington has plenty to play for. And Dylan Strome has been carrying the flag for the offense alongside Ovechkin for much of this past month. Boston faces a critical matchup tonight at Nashville. I mentioned Nashville's on a two-game loser. I think it could be three by the end of the night. And Pavel Zacha will have a say in it for the Bruins, priced at only $6,100. He's got points in 10 of his last 12 games played, an extended hot streak for him. So as long as that hot stick is facing a team that's kind of a bit of a slide all of a sudden, I like that matchup too. And the most expensive player that either one of us has named, I guess, in this spot today comes to me. Usually it's you that goes big bucks, but I'm going to take Kirill Kaprizov, $9,800 from Minnesota in a home date against Ottawa. The Senators are reeling, and Kaprizov, maybe the hottest stick on the sheet tonight, 19 points in his last 12 games played. I think he's got a great chance to extend that. And pairing him with another winger who has been fairly consistent in scoring, despite the fact he's had a troubled year. Again, Jonathan Huberdeau for Calgary, priced in at only $5,000, faces Anaheim, a team that's really leaking goals against, and that's why I put him in the lineup for that cheap value to bring some balance to my winger slot. On the blue line, I know that Florida played a tough game against Toronto last night, but I think it's a much easier out for them tonight, and that's why I used Aaron Ekblad on the blue line, $4,500 for him. He's one of their three scoring defensemen, and I think they're all going to factor in what could be a points night for the visitors there tonight. I looked at the Islanders, and I picked up Ryan Pulock at the beginning of the week for my own team, and I'm hoping that he has a big night against Chicago. He's got 4 points in his last six games played, costing only $4,800 in that matchup that the Islanders absolutely must get tonight. And then in terms of my utility guys, I saw a lot of Vladimir to Tarasenko, $5,600 for Florida tonight against Montreal. He's got 6 points in his last five games played, looking good in his new uniform, playing a top six role for the Panthers in that matchup. And then another Boston Bruin who's been scoreless of late, but he had a real tear before that. So I'm going to go back to Jake DeBrusque. He's playing wing on the top line, so it's a great assignment for him to get off the schneid. $5,600, that price tag, as I said, against Nashville. Looks good as a pickup. The goalie of choice, AJ, they don't come in under $7,000 too much on FanDuel in a favorable matchup. And I think Jake Allen's got that against your favorite hockey club that's playing on the second of back-to-back. So that's a consideration that I looked at. There are a few teams playing the second of back-to-back, so you might want to pray up on them for your goalie pick. But I went with Allen for mine, and he's looked good in the Devils uniform so far since his transition there in recent weeks.
Well, there you go, folks. Paul with a losing lineup tonight. that won't get you anywhere.
Another brick in the wall of AJ's new house. That's what I'm looking at. AJ, in terms of final thoughts, I wanted to turn your attention to a guy who might be the next all-time NHL goal scorer. When we're looking at the Ovechkin chase, suddenly there's talk locally of what about Austin Matthews as being the next one? Let me build that case for you, and I'll get your rebuttal on this. Ovechkin right now is scoring at a rate of just under 60% in terms of games played, and it was just over 61% in his first eight seasons. That's notable for comparison purposes with Matthews. I'll get to him in a sec. He's got 848 goals in 1,417 games played. That is marginally higher, faster pace than Wayne Gretzky, who currently holds the all-time record, of course, with 894 goals in 1,497 games, just a hair under 60% in terms of goals per game. Stay with me for a sec, AJ, because the numbers are interesting now when you bring in Matthews into the discussion, considering that he has, after last night's pair, 361 goals in 554 games. Remember I said both guys were just under 60%? This guy, Matthews, is scoring at a 65% clip career to date, and that's with his second 60-goal season in his back pocket. If he plays the 1,417 games that Ovechkin has played so far in his career, that pace translates to 923 goals, or 75 more than what Ovechkin has tallied to date. Now, I know it's a tough pace to carry on through the rest of a career, and we got to account for possible injuries and sorts, but it's got me excited to think that a guy wearing the blue and white, who won't turn 27 years of age until next September, looks to be on a real good pace to threaten the most important single offensive stat in the record book. And I know it's being chased down by Ovechkin, but he might not last too long in the number one spot if Matthews has his say.
No comment.
I'm sorry. But those are all good numbers, and it got me smiling like the butcher's dog today, AJ. So
it's an intriguing argument. It's obviously, you know, a long way to go. As you said, Matthews is just 26 right now. So he's obviously got a ways to go before he's, up there in the 38-year-old range that Ovechkin is now. But, you look at those numbers, Matthews put up, you look back, the COVID year, Ovechkin had just 24 that year. That obviously factors into that as well. Matthews fared a little bit better, obviously. That season had 41. So these kind of shortened seasons that impacted Ovechkin's career may not factor into Matthews' career. Who knows? We're about due for a lockout. As NHL
Please
likes
no.
to do, but
please no.
Yeah, I agree. But all that to say, it's an intriguing argument. The numbers don't lie. He's on pace to do it. Like, well, I'll leave it with that. He's on pace to do it,
Paul. He's ahead of the pace, and that's
well.
We like that here at Toronto. In any case, it's a fun way for me to close out this episode with you, AJ, and we want to thank our listeners for tuning into RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. As always, remind you that we're here to help you with all things related to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter, where you can also follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. So long, everybody. Have a great week.